This is Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm Mario Murillo. In the next half hour, as part of our ongoing series looking at Puerto Rico, we'll hear the keynote speech given at a conference held recently in New York City and in Puerto Rico, entitled Race and the Construction of the Puerto Rican Identity. The two-part series of meetings and workshops examined the African presence in Puerto Rico and how the issue of race has been superseded in the Puerto Rican national dialogue by the never-ending question of the island's political status. Coming up next on Our Americas. Weeks ago, a member of the Puerto Rican legislature shocked his fellow lawmakers when he declared the island should offer to sell Puerto Rican children as a means to increase tourism. The pro-statehood legislator, Augusto Sanchez Fuentes, was speaking during a debate on abortion. According to his plan, which he detailed during his presentation, Sanchez proposed that the government buy the newborn babies of adolescent mothers and offer them for sale to U.S. tourists. As ridiculous as this may have been, he went even further, raising even more eyebrows when he stated that the island should only attempt to sell white babies, since wealthy folks from the United States would not want to purchase any black babies. He said the island should keep its black babies since they grow up to be such good athletes. The comments by Sanchez have raised the ire of many people on the island, as well as others in the U.S.-based Puerto Rican community. But while clearly being in a rational, indeed racist position that for the most part has been condemned, the sentiments expressed by Sanchez reflect a much deeper problem of racism that continues to permeate Puerto Rican society. Ironically, his remarks were made public the same day that a major conference was being held in New York City that was organized in order to examine issues of race and identity in Puerto Rico and in the diaspora. Entitled Race and the Construction of the Puerto Rican Identity and sponsored by the Caribbean Cultural Center, the conference began in New York and was continued a week later in Puerto Rico. The conference covered a broad range of issues, including relations between blacks and Latinos in the U.S., the nature and roots of Puerto Rico as a mixed-race society, how spiritual and cultural movements in the island have affected racial identities both on the island and in the diaspora, and the impact of Puerto Rico's colonial status and how it's affected the struggle for equality on the island. The keynote address was made by veteran Puerto Rican journalist Enid Rute Gomez, who teaches at the Central University of Bayamón in Puerto Rico. Enid Rute Gomez talked about what race and identity means for her as a black Puerto Rican woman. We go now to that speech.
Yeah, well, here we are. I try to connect my life in the United States and in Puerto Rico and try to bring up the foundations of our common ground. And I guess, could be called a work in progress. So here it goes. More than 40 years ago, as a child of the struggle for civil rights, my parents took me to Puerto Rico in search of a more equal life. As you know, the 1950s in the United States was not the most civil of times. It was a decade tainted and tarnished by the Red Scare and the Black Plague. The great singer, scholar, and athlete Paul Robeson, for example, was hounded into incredible despair. Only now, at the end of the 20th century, is his indisputable talent being brought out from under the rock of racism. This rock is heaved at all of our souls, both black and white, by the dreadful deities of ignorance. The Cold War chilled us all. As a child in the boroughs of New York City, the sight of a burning cross on the lawn of our house froze my heart and the fist of fear took hold of my soul. My parents were, nonetheless, in control. We left for San Juan, Puerto Rico, I frozen and fearful, full of timid hopes, murmuring the oft-repeated prayers of my father's ministry, of my mother's nurturing. We were seeking the consolation of the merciful, leaving behind the minions of immoral behavior to wreak their horrors on someone else, on another minority. Puerto Rico was betwixt an aging agriculture and infant industry when we arrived. The island represented a new opportunity for those of us who, like Moses, braved the waves of uncertainty spurred on by the divine knowledge that peace was nearby. We were children of a marauding white culture. This culture deliberately set minefields for us at the doors of constitutional opportunity. This culture sniggered and gloated when the doors of equality blew up in our faces. This assault on our very selves, on our self-esteem, on our need to be Christian, to imitate the Savior, to follow the teachings of my father's church, this unconscionable assault was the fifth unspoken point in President Truman's 4-point program. We had no right to be here. We were outsiders to the extreme. On the long flight to Puerto Rico, the seasons appeared to have changed and the tempo of human culture to have taken on another beat. We entered another dimension of post-World War II civilization that was perceptible and palpable. The bright red flamboyantes waved their greetings. How different from the solid oak of my former neighborhood. The sky unthreatening despite the threat of hurricanes. This was the island home of my mother, and we were welcome to stay. We absorbed the culture and conventions of Puerto Rico, attuned always to its ongoing political, social, and economic drama. We learned that the island's existential tribulations centered on politics, on identity and definition, on island nation, island state, or island commonwealth. We learned in high school, university, and at work that in a developing society, the arts become the weapon of choice to respond to the urgent and perennial conundrum of personal identity. Outstanding painters, poets, singers, dancers struggle to extract the essence of their existence, the meaning of their lives, from the chaos of their context, of their relationships with the United States, Latin America, and the Caribbean. Artists struggle to reflect their singular selfhood in the images they painted, performed, and projected. The trappings of relentless North American racism gradually receded in my mind into the warmth of a culture rooted in Africa, Europe, and the indigenous peoples of Latin America and the Caribbean. The exquisite polemics of James Baldwin, clamoring for recognition in the constitutional context of the United States of America, became the exalted poetics of Luis Pales Matos, seeking to carve a wedge of blackness in Puerto Rican culture. Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella encountered their black counterparts in Roberto Clemente and Orlando Cepeda. The ball of racial renewal and force was now in the court of Puerto Rico, although no one at the time said so aloud. The aggressive politics of Adam Clayton Powell somehow surfaced as a tone poem in the politics of Ernesto Ramos Antonini, the black speaker of the Puerto Rico House of Representatives. The black migration art of a Jacob Lawrence segued into the scintillated pride of the Puerto Rican blackness of Rafael Trufino's magnificent Gordita. The aching, destructive question of color that had almost burned my family to the ground in the United States of America engendered the constructive, though unspoken, question of character and place of race and class in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is an island 100 by 35, and its landscape is attractive and its hospitality well known. Unlike the philosophy of human solidarity proposed by the great English minister and poet John Donne, Puerto Rico is often an island unto itself, particularly regarding race. To speak of race and class, to speak of racism in Puerto Rico, is to embark on a turbulent journey into the island's cultural psyche with the great danger of crashing on the shoals of denial. To many, racism does not exist in Puerto Rico. Say what? The question of race and the horrific consequences of racism are buried under the huge haystack of political self-determination. Debates on race are secondary to debates on politics, on Wither, the Puerto Rican collective. To place the racial debate on the table of the island collective, as Professor Isabelo Senon Cruz learned to his initial dismay when he published his breakthrough volumes on racism in Puerto Rico, is to break the code of genetic silence that hovers over and pervades the collective. On the surface, Puerto Ricans are one big happy family of blondes, browns, and blacks, and no one has to guess who's coming to dinner unless that black person, male or female, wants to stay and intermingle. It is easy to get lost in the comforting embrace of the Puerto Rican family, to hide within the mosaic of manumission of a mixed culture that abolished slavery a decade after the American Civil War. It is, in fact, a healing experience for those of us born in the direct line of fire of American racist culture. For the longest time, as a student and as a journalist in Puerto Rico, I refrained from looking at the nature of the mantle, from analyzing the chilling effect of its deceptive warmth. Repeatedly, I heard the refrain, "El que no tiene dinga, tiene mandinga," meaning that no Puerto Rican was exempt from the infusion of black blood. I wanted to believe, but was beginning to have my doubts. I thought of the children, the little brown baby with sparkling eyes, so known to my parents, and began to have my doubts. "A child," says James Baldwin, "cannot be taught by anyone who despises him, and a child cannot afford to be fooled. A child cannot be taught by anyone whose demand, essentially, is that the child repudiate his experience and all that gives him sustenance and enter a limbo in which he will no longer be black and in which he knows that he can never become white. Black people have lost too many black children that way." The politics of rejection is an open secret in many societies, including Puerto Rico. Though rarely acknowledged in depth by either the privileged or impoverished protagonist, rejection is at the heart of the deepest conflicts of civilization. Each person in this room can draw up a list of crimes against the core of humanity, against our core as people, of utter rejection for reasons of race, sex, ethnicity, religion. Imagine the anguish, rage, and yes, laughter of a poor black Spanish-speaking lesbian with children in the constitutional pursuit of happiness who refuses to believe in a Catholic God. "Yet do I marvel," says the poet County Cullen, "at this curious thing to make a poet black and bid him sing." The politics of rejection, of exclusion in Puerto Rico, has made blackness invisible. We roam the circles of society, high and low, looking for a connection other than language to our society, looking for a way to relay and relate the importance of our individual stories to the larger tale. Language, as James Baldwin wrote, is the vehicle of confession. It reveals the private identity and connects one with or divorces one from the larger public or communal identity. The Puerto Rican black, the black Puerto Rican, does not have a black language, a language other than drums, that articulates the peculiar black experience and yearning to rise to the surface of equality, to not be suffused or submerged in the well of invisibility, of unspeakable loneliness, of forced solitude. Julio de Burgos, the sage of Puerto Rican poetry, would see a soulmate in Langston Hughes. Both spoke of rivers. Here's Langston Hughes. "I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers." Hughes composed this poem in 1921. 16 years later, in 1937, Julia de Burgos wrote hers. I'm quoting a few fragments. "Rio Grande de Loíza, flow through my spirit. Let my soul take refuge in your streams, to seek the source that sold you as a child and on impulse return you to the riverbed, Rio Grande de Luisa, my source, my river, since the maternal bud offered me forth, from peaks with you I descended, seeking new channels for pale longings, and my childhood became a poem in the river, and a river in the poem of my primal dreams. Rio Grande de Luisa, huge river, huge cry, greatest of our island's laments, transcended only by mine, which surges from my soul for my enslaved land. The Black Puerto Rican is divorced from the larger public, from contributing to its cultural wealth, and the larger public does not even notice, does not hear, or want to hear our voices. We are excluded from the census. We do not know our numbers, much less our names. We do know that many of us are in prison, working in construction, or as domestics. We do know that many of us are corralled in the pockets of folklore that so astound tourists. We are deprived and excluded, as the Puerto Rican scholars here will tell you in detail during this event, from the pages of academic research, from the media, from the highest levels of public administration. We are confined and shackled to the history of slavery, to the dull subtleties of Dinga and Mandinga. We do not voluntarily engage in our history of freedom or revere those black heroes and heroines who repelled the military forces of colonial empires. Unlike the magnificent Puerto Rican collector, Arturo Schoenberg, who befriended my parents in the 1930s, Puerto Ricans, a collective of degrees of color, are not inspired to dig up their history as a whole. The migratory trek of the Puerto Ricans of the 40s and the 50s in search of employment, a trek that included Dr. Antonia Pantoja, founder of universities and recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, has been transformed in today's commuter nation. The nature of the nation of Puerto Rico, its overarching resistance and resilience, has been exalted in the stories of Luis Rafael Sanchez, Nicolás Zamor, Ana Lidia Vega, and Magali García Ramis, the novels of Rosario Ferré, in the animated poetry of Tato Laviera, the essays by Juan Flores, and the paintings of Francisco Rodón, Antonio Martorell, and Arnaldo Roche Ravel. We traverse the bridges between nations, leaping over the barriers of language and stereotypes with the artistry of Juano Hernández, the brothers José and Rafael Ferrer, Chita Rivera, Justino Diaz, Miriam Colón, Jimmy Smits, and Rita Moreno, and more recently on Broadway, the popular singers Mark Anthony and Anita Nazario. The contortions of our political objectives are embodied in the likes of Luis Gutierrez, José Serrano, and Nidia Velasquez. The Puerto Rico Legal Defense Fund recalls the legacy of the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund, the same organization that was led by Thurgood Marshall. Our parallels as artists, writers, as academics and activists are inherent. All of us are part of the mainstream of human potential, and yet the footsteps of our migration, of our contemporary commute, have been erased in the sands of our times. Blackness is subordinated to political identity on both sides of the shore. When W.E.B. Du Bois spoke of the color line as the problem of the 20th century, he was not referring only to the crisis between black and white. Booker T. Washington's philosophy of self-sustenance predated Muñoz Marín's Operation Bootstrap. Martin Luther King's exclamation, "Free at last," has yet to be exclaimed in Puerto Rico. The organizers of this seminal conference, Drs. Palmira Rios, Juan Diuste, Marta Moreno, Mayra Santos, and Ada Verdejo, can come to the following conclusion in their riveting proposal for this conference. And I quote, "The impact of race and racism is rarely addressed in the study of Puerto Rican migration to the United States. The general tendency in the migration literature is to subordinate the issue of internal racism to the discrimination suffered by all Puerto Ricans. The argument that Puerto Ricans are neither black, white nor black ignores the fact that not being black American does not mean black Puerto Ricans are immune from the fate of all peoples of African descent in the United States. The blue-eyed, fair-haired Puerto Rican is not an identical reflection in the mirror of white America, and suffers the awkward consequences of having bought into the Dinga and Mandinga syndrome. Further, the conference organizers say, Black Puerto Ricans are absent from the American debate on the future of race relations in the United States. Black Puerto Ricans are often caught between the horns of a cultural dilemma, rejection by both white and Black America. Without the distinctive perspective of Puerto Rico, that debate is hobbled. The question that this conference poses is essential to our salvation as members of the human race. Can we build channels of communication and collaboration across the African diaspora? My answer is yes. A resounding yes, 1,000 times yes. My conspiracy in a silence of 40 years is over. It has lasted long enough. Our internal apartheid is finished. Our mutuality as many-hued Africans of the diaspora is born and assured. Let our griots, our scholars, and our soldiers get down to the business of charting new avenues of communication. Get down to the beauty of enabling a dialogue that replaces harsh stereotypes with courageous archetypes. This undertaking into an exegesis of our inclusive humanity can be done, it must be done, for ultimately we will say in the unwavering, unbending belief of my parents in unison, Thy will be done, Thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. Amen, I say, and again, amen. Thank you.
Enid Ruta Gomez is a veteran journalist and educator. She was speaking at Race and the Construction of the Puerto Rican Identity, a conference sponsored by the Caribbean Cultural Center in New York City. During the question and answer session, I asked her how racism and the issues relating to identity have been used by the political power structure on the island to maintain the status quo, basically a colonial situation that has limited participation, indeed repressed the participation of the independence movement in Puerto Rico.
One of the basic things about, any discussion of racism in Puerto Rico is that it's very rare that the Black person's point of view is taken for granted, or rather it's taken for granted or is understood. For example, when I wrote different columns about political status, about people would believe me. But if I would say that this was a racist comment, or they say, oh no, that's not so. So what does that do? You know, if you multiply that type of attitude, it takes away from your own sense of being able to share and articulate an experience. If you cannot say that there's racism because you yourself have felt it, have experienced it, it's like people close the door to your experience. So you feel that you're not a part of that context, a part of that society. So how does that, maintain a colonialist attitude? Well, it's not one manifestation. It's the whole different dimensions where if you cannot believe what someone says about their own personal experience, well, how can you believe anything else? How can you believe anything else they say? They are ignoring you. So they have people who not only ignore the race issue, they have people who ignore the feminist issue, they have people who ignore the gay issue. It's like every type of issue that is of value to the human being is ignored by the dominant in a status quo, or what you call a radical statehood, although that's sort of like paradoxical, right? Radical statehood. But it's like your own experience is diminished. And when you have your own experience diminished, well, how can you see the great injury of a colonial situation? You have very few cases of racism in the Labor Department. People don't really see it as such. you have many people in Puerto Rico who do not see, they're Puerto Rican first instead of black Puerto Rican, so they ignore the fact that they are black, and with all that entails. So it's almost internalized. You don't see people in black people in government high government positions. There is no one. There's no black person on the Supreme Court. In fact, one of the Supreme Court justices told me, you know, said, "Well, this is a shame." But what happens is that the school system does not create a context for students, at least in the public schools, to excel. So it's not just one level, but it starts from the bottom. You have many black people in jail, you know. So you won't see the black people in positions of power. You don't see a role model. You know, you may see in boxing or some sports, but in terms of and in the University of Puerto Rico, very few professors. In journalism, I always say that when I left the San Juan Star after 31 years, I took the whole black race with me. You know. So though it's that way, which is very, and no one really wants to say anything about it, because how can you prove it?
You've been listening to Enid Rute Gomez, a veteran journalist and educator. She was speaking at Race and the Construction of the Puerto Rican Identity, a conference sponsored by the Caribbean Cultural Center in New York City. And you're listening to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. We hope to play more highlights of that conference in the coming months as we continue exploring different aspects of Puerto Rico on this the 100th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of the island. If you want cassette highlights of the conference, you can write to us at P.O. Box 1091, New York, New York, 10116. That's Our America's P.O. Box 1091, New York, New York, 10116. And that's about all the time we have on today's program. Our Americas is produced at the studios of WBAI Pacifica Radio in cooperation with NACLA, the North American Congress on Latin America. It is funded in part by grants from the Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media, the Funding Exchange, and the New York State Council on the Arts. Associate producers are Sarah Gill, Amy Standen, Walter Krockmal, and Laura Tarantini, with production assistance by Vicky Hippel and Maceo Fuentes. If you have any questions or comments, send us an email at mmcompa@igc.org. For Our Americas, I'm Mario Murillo. Thanks for listening, and stay strong.